Welcome to our guest satsang this month featuring Eshwar Zegobin. Hey, Eshwar.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah. Actually, I'm hearing you through the computer, which is weird because I have my, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. It's my problem on my end. I'll figure it out. Yeah, we hear you loud and clear, Eshwar. So let me just give a short introduction. That is not working. As Don has been telling you for the past 6 months, I mean 6 weeks, Eshwar is not yet widely known in the non-dual community. In fact, Eshwar and I worked together a little bit to come up with a little bio for him and a headshot for our website. You know, marketing's not his thing. But his thing is he's here to be truly helpful. As Don has been telling you, the message that Eshwar speaks confirms what we've learned from the spiritual masters and is indeed startling in its simplicity. His spiritual path is remarkable both for its brevity and for the depth of practical insight he manifests. In less than a year, Eshwar went from a recovery program to a profound spiritual awakening to his true nature. And again, as Don's been telling us, Eshwar is happy to speak to those with sincere questions and does not charge for his time. You can reach him at sensewithoutmind@gmail.com. And that's it for the introduction. So let me see if I can actually get these earplugs plugged in. Okay. So, Eshwar, thank you for joining with us tonight.
No problem.
What I thought we might do to start is have you, well, in a nutshell, tell us what you discovered and how you discovered it, and then we can kind of use that, I think, as a springboard into further discussion.
Well, the what is something that really can't be talked about, but the what essentially is the nature of, at the time, what I considered my existence to be. That's the only thing that can be known. And the only thing that really should be known is what's at the core of you. The process that I went through with that was, I can't pinpoint a particular part of it. So maybe I should kind of start at the beginning.
That'd be great.
So I essentially, prior to any of this stuff, awakening or spirituality, I didn't know any. I still don't know much about this stuff. And I didn't, I wasn't a seeker by any means. What led to all of this was I had an issue with drinking. And I decided there was a situation that occurred that prompted me to seek treatment. And when my life prior to that was busy, I worked, I ran my own electrical contracting company. I had, you know, at the time, sometimes up to 16 guys working with me. And that was my life. I worked. I got married. We had kids. All the things that I thought that you're supposed to do in life. And there was just so much that was going on. Well, anyways, when the drinking stuff just kind of went out of control, I went and I sought and I got help through the retreat, which is a place in Lancaster County. When I went there, what actually happened was you weren't allowed to have cell phones, no kind of communication with work or, you know, even my wife, kids, no one. So when I was in there, I got a break from essentially the world. Yeah. And everything that I thought I needed to do. And when I got there, I realized I didn't know what I needed to do. So I followed suggestions of the counselors and the stuff that they we're talking about there. That's when I got introduced to meditation and a whole bunch of other stuff that was there. I didn't have an idea what meditation even was. I thought it was just kind of sit silent. But what I did realize was the way I was and all the things that I needed to do, I didn't need to do them in this instant. All I had to do was focus on myself. And when I got the space to do that, it was peaceful, but I didn't know who I was. Apart from all the stuff that I was doing, all the things I felt that I should do or society kind of said that makes one successful, you know, a good son, a good husband, you know, a provider, all of that stuff. Just, I don't know, that's what I did. And I didn't have to do those. I was there for 21 days, I believe. And a big part of me, one of the things I realized early on, it wasn't drinking wasn't my issue. My issue was me. And I was a very angry person. And I realized very early on in the treatment facility that I was the one that was causing my own resentments. And I, in turn, I was causing my own suffering. So why didn't I just stop? And when that realization hit me, it felt like a huge weight was lifted off my shoulders, that I didn't need to be this angry about things that didn't matter. And my anger is directed towards people who didn't do anything and weren't even aware that they were, that they did anything. So all of it was in here. Mm-hmm. Fast forward a little bit, I went to, after I left the treatment facility, I opted to stay in a recovery house in Lancaster County. And for 6 months, I stayed there for, I got out in February of 2017. I stayed there till about August. And in that period of time, I only focused, my only focus was to try and figure out who and what I was. So I started listening to all kinds of gurus and stuff, like things that I found on YouTube. And it was helpful. Some stuff was helpful. I started listening to people in the Indian tradition because I figure, well, I'm Indian and these people feel, you know, Indian people must have this. What I found out very early on was there was a language barrier because I spoke English and they were speaking Sanskrit or Hindi, which was then interpreted and translated. And that's what I'm hearing. So I'm not even hearing what's really being said. So I kind of, I'd listened to a lot of Ramana Maharshi stuff, Nisargadatta, but I still didn't understand what they were talking about. There were experiences that occurred that I didn't know what it was. So I started, I was like, well, let me start listening to people who speak English. And one of the first person that I listened to was Eckhart Tolle. And he talked about the power of presence by all that good stuff that most of you guys probably heard already. But one thing that it kind of taught me was to how to be present and how to be here. Because I couldn't figure out what was here if I wouldn't accept what was here right now. And one realization that hit with that was that how am I going to find myself if I keep getting up and going and looking for myself? And that's when, like, the present moment just opened up for me. And then I just busted out laughing. Probably for like 20 minutes just outside because everything was, like, super clear in that moment. And then everything kind of came back. The thoughts and craziness and life stuff and feelings and emotional stuff. And I started doing my step work. And in AA 12 steps, step 4 is where you do an inventory of yourself. And the inventory were basically ideas and concepts that you had about yourself and the hurt and damage and whatever it was that I kind of created. But the key thing that it said is this character that had these defects. And it just kind of, I was just like, what? Character. And I started to look at myself. My name, Ishwar, that was one character that had its own personality traits. then the way I was with my mom, she was the one that called me Ishwar. That's how I was with them as a son. When I was out with my friends and drinking buddy, I was known as Los or Carlos. And that character had all its, you know, traits and personality. And, you know, when I was with my wife, I was a different, I sort of realized that all these different characters are just characters and they're just all ideas and concepts. So I was like, instead of fixing the character that had the defects, why not just do it with the entire character altogether? That's what I did. But it still left me with, there's something here. I just didn't know what I was. So that's when I got into self-inquiry with the Ramana Maharshi stuff. And there were some experiences that occurred and I didn't know what it was. I started doing some meditation stuff. Just looking at all different ways to kind of figure this out. And Osho's website, they had 112 steps to Shiva. And the gist of it is, if you know, you try each one, if one will work for you, and then, you know, that's it. And it's geared to instantly wake you up to the nature of your true self, or not so much true self, but what's actually here. And step five, or the fifth one, worked for me. And I was sitting in my truck meditating for about an hour and a half, and I went to open my eyes, and it felt like a bolt of lightning shot from the center of the earth straight through my feet, out the top of my head, and felt like a finger touched the top of my brain. And I just kind of shook for, like, I don't know, maybe about 45 minutes. And all this was when I was at the recovery house, and I went into the recovery house, and I stood in the living room, and I looked at a wall. And what it felt like 5 minutes for me, the guys in the house said it was like almost 45 minutes. And there was nothing. No concept of anything, no thought of anything. There was just absolutely nothing. And I mean, eventually I came back to and started talking to the guys. And then I ended up leaving the recovery house and coming back to Philadelphia. I was still reading some Buddhism stuff and some other teachers. And one day I was just laying down in bed. And prior to this, I had tried ayahuasca to try and it's a healing type of things. There was a lot of emotional trauma, things that happened in my past when I was younger. It released all of that. But it didn't help me find out exactly what was here. And one day I was laying down in my bedroom, and I was focusing on my breath. I had this sensation at the center of my forehead and a sensation in my chest. And I just kind of focused on that for a little bit. All these thoughts and stuff was coming into my head. I was like, you know what? I don't know what the Buddha was talking about. I don't know what Eckhart Tolle is talking about. I don't know what any of these people are talking about. All I know is my experience of what's here. So let's break that down. That was my exact thought. I was like, let's figure out what's here. I know none of the ideas and concepts that I have is me. None of those characters are me. What am I left with? And it just kind of came to me to remember yourself. So I was like, okay. So I had the image in my head of how I was when I was like now, then in my early 20s, then as a teenager, then around 10 years old, then around 7 or 8 years old. And then I got back to the very first memory that I could remember. And the memory was, I'm from the Caribbean Islands. So when they teach you, if you're not learning, they're going to beat you. So that's how we were taught. So the memory was that I was supposed to spell the word fruit and I couldn't spell it. I was probably about 4 or 5 years old and I was getting beat for it. And it wasn't so much the trauma that was there that I was looking at. I was like, that's the first thing I could remember, but I was 4 years old. what was before that? And something inside me just say, just focus on that. What was there before that? And I got a little scared at first. It brought me back to me laying in the bed. And then I just took a deep breath and I just kind of closed my eyes. And I said, all right, let's go and see. And it just said, let go. And I let go into that. And the whole thing unraveled. There was no me there. There was no... And to speak about this would imply that there was a me that was there that had this experience. But it's not like that. There was only experience. There was the sense of me, an individual, a person, a something vanished completely. And with that, everything of importance that I ever considered important in life went with it.
That's amazing. And has that continued in your experience, that absence of a me?
Yeah, I mean, there isn't anything here of substance, of meaning, of value, in the sense that we can give meaning or we can place value in something. That's the only way it appears to have value, but that doesn't mean that it has value. Just because we think that it does, doesn't mean that it is. And it's the same way with ourselves. Just because we think we're like this, doesn't mean this is how it is. And experience in itself is, it's disjointed. There isn't a self here. There isn't a me here. There are sensations, yes. There is experience that's occurring. There's all these things that are happening, but there isn't this unifying principle or concept of I that's saying it is responsible for the experience or the experience is happening to it. That's not there anymore. It doesn't mean that anything really stops or changes, but there just isn't, it's not how we thought that it was. It doesn't have the same flavor, the same intensity of a thought propelling world, or being caught from thought to thought to thought, that this is how things are happening. It's that running dialogue, that commentary that stopped just for a second for you to see the falsity of yourself. Because only in that dialogue is where you find any conception of you. Prior to that, you can't even define you.
So has that dialogue stopped for you permanently?
That was the thing. The thing was never to stop the dialogue, was to see the dialogue was a part of what's going on, but has no importance. You experiencing green and the thought that pops up in your head that says that's green really has no value. The experience is there. It's knowing. You saying that it has green or that it's green, the concept that points back to experience, which is what all concepts are, it doesn't have a value. The experience is what's there. You're taught a thought. So it's not about stopping thoughts. It's seeing that that's also part of what's going on. That's also part of the conditioning, because we learned. And the only way we learn is through ideas and concepts. You're not going to stop that flow. That's just how it is.
Can you tell me the advantage to living without the thought of a me that interprets?
You don't get caught up in stories. You're here, and everything as it is that's happening as it's unfolding, that's all there ever is. There isn't a thought of what's going to happen tomorrow and being drawn into that story of fears and ideas and concepts. Yes, we can plan for tomorrow, but there's no attachment to the outcome because you don't know if you're going to make it to tomorrow. And same thing with the past stuff. The past is created from this very moment. From right here, right now is where a past occurs. From right here, right now is where a future potentially can come. But none of those have any meaning. They're just thoughts about what may have happened and what could have happened. It doesn't really make much difference. And we like to think that we have control because we can think about stuff. Only in thinking is there assumed control, but there isn't any. That just, all of this just happened.
We have no control over anything that happens to us.
Because there isn't a you that something is happening to.
Right. Yeah, and would you say that this you, this me, that I think there is the source of my suffering?
Well, of course. What else could it be?
I don't know.
It only happens up here. Right here, right now, in this very instance, if I ask you a simple question, what is your next thought? Everything stops. Check it right now. And right here, right now, in this second, as you're listening to me, is there anything wrong? Is there any suffering?
No. No suffering. No thoughts. No suffering.
Is there any misery?
No.
When do they come?
When I'm worried about something or when I'm regretting something that happened.
Exactly. In the past, which is an imagination, or the future, which is also an imagination.
Right. Eshwar, and by the way, folks, I want to invite you guys to ask Eshwar questions directly. Eshwar and I have had a couple of conversations that I have found very, very helpful. And as these folks know, we talked about this a little bit this morning in our Sunday gathering, these thoughts of the conceptual self. But again,
I got a question.
Yeah, go ahead, Jay.
Eshwar, very, very glad to see you here. Thank you for coming into the sanctuary. I'm grateful you're here. Question about what you described. Do you still find yourself in what I would describe as a stable state of this no self, or do you still find sometimes slipping back into the identification with the self? Could you comment on that?
This isn't a state. This is how we always are. The overlay of ideas and concepts is what stopped, but this is how you are all the time. Your song just kind of went off.
Yeah, Jay, you're muted. Did you have something else you wanted to say?
Yeah, it was a question about Eshwar's experience. Your experience right now, do you find yourself slipping back into story or personality? Or I get it that you're saying it's not a state, but is your experience or whatever you call it consistent and stable in what you describe? Is that what you experience all the time, or is it sometimes?
You mean if it's abiding? Yes. This is how it is. For me, this is how it is.
Yeah, and there's another question here. Lynn Turner says, she wrote it on the board. She says, if you are not a you, what do you think you are, or what do you experience?
Well, there is no answer to that. Anything that you can conceptualize will have you chasing concepts. Me telling you that doesn't do you any good. You got to go look for yourself and see. It's an experiential thing. And I could tell you till you're blue in the face, you're the nothingness that the entire universe expresses itself through. That means absolutely nothing to you. You know? All of us are the expression of the universe. That's how I feel, and I see certain things. I sense that.
You sense certain things?
Well, sensing comes through experience, but the knowing of what you are is an experiential thing. It's a knowledge that's second to none. It doesn't require you comparing anything else. It's an experiential knowing. You know, concepts don't go here. Intellect does not go here. Mind does not go here. Thoughts does not go here. When they all stop, then the here just opens up. There is no you there.
Well, and when we spoke yesterday, I told you that I had been going through an, for lack of a better term, existential crisis. Mm-hmm. And I said to you that I was willing to acknowledge or ready to acknowledge that I didn't exist. And you're like, no, that's not it.
Right.
Yeah. Do you mind talking about that a little bit?
So the point that I reached when I was doing all of this was I didn't know what anybody else was talking about. I had to, one, be present and aware initially. I also had to accept that I didn't know anything about no self, you don't exist type of stuff. I didn't know anything about any of that. So the concepts that you're bringing, when I kind of went through all of this stuff, I wasn't aware of any of those ideas and concepts. Right. But you do have to accept that you exist right here, right now. And then break down what is it that you think exists, your ideas and concepts of what you think yourself to be. And once those are seen as ideas and concepts, then you'll start to see through them and know that those things aren't you, but there's still something here. That's the only way self-inquiry is effective. Aside from that, you're just, I think Ramana Maharshi said it best, is that you're trying to out of fire with a wet noodle. You got to accept that you do exist and you're here and accept that you just don't know what it is. And then self-inquiry is effective. Aside from that, you're breaking down an idea that there is a self that may or may not exist. You're not looking at your own experience of what's happening right here and right now.
Yeah. So the one thing that I know is I am. But what is the I? What is the amness, I guess?
You can say that, but it's just pointing back to before you can even ask that question, there's an intent there. And that intent is on a very subtle level, a conceptual you.
Yeah.
It takes a fair amount of work to get to this point. For me, it was 6 months, but it was 6 months of that focus that I had was because I knew nothing before. Everything that I thought I knew about anything, I didn't know really. I mean, geez, in my own experience of the things that I thought I needed to do in life were things that I was taught what success means, what it is to be to. I'm supposed to get married when I reach a certain age and have kids, and that's what everybody else did. So that's what I needed to do. I was at this age. You know, I'm supposed to have a house and take care of my wife and take care of my kids. But all those were things that I was taught. I wasn't even sure those were things that I wanted to do.
Yeah.
You know, and a break away from all of that, it was like everything was brand new for me. There was new experiences. It was almost living life on your terms for the first time without believing what anybody else had to say. But instead of going and living the life, I chose to question the nature of my own existence. Because if I didn't know anything prior to this, what the hell do I know now?
Yeah. I see Hal has his hand up. Hal, go ahead and take the mic.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. What you spoke of earlier about the past and the future is in the now, and intellectually, I understand that very well. So my question is that since I know that the past and the future don't exist because they're just imaginations in the now, when I don't have that, when Jay was talking about that permanent understanding of that, and I was thinking that I knew that before you did, but now that you've had this awakening, you've come to discover the thing that I already know. So what's the difference there in what happens to you or me? And I knew that when you come to know after you awaken, but I know it before I've awakened, and I'll drop the mic.
You make an assumption based on an intellectual understanding of this. This isn't that way. This isn't all knowing that you can consider knowledge that you know can only come from the experience of it. Aside from that, you only know something that somebody else taught to you and that was taught to somebody else. It's not something that you experience on your own and for yourself. It's not a truth to you.
That's right, and that's what I'm saying. Even if I came to understanding myself, it's not a lasting truth. So I actually embrace that truth. But it's, like you say, it's not really a truth yet until I live and breathe it, right?
Right. It's seeing through the point of identification. The point of which you took yourself to be a something.
Ah, okay. Yeah, I got that. Perfect. Thank you.
Ashwar, there's a couple of things I want to ask you about. One is what I thought I heard you say a little while ago in this interview, and I in fact heard you say it in your earlier interview I listened to with Sean. What's Sean's last name? With
Nevins.
Yes, mm-hmm. With Sean Nevins. And that is that reality can't be known.
Exactly.
Yeah. Tell me about that.
Okay. What's occurring right now in everyone where you're at, you can look at anything that's around you. It can't be known through ideas and concepts. Reality is right in front of you. It's right there. It's everything that's occurring right now. Ideas and concepts is an attempt to break apart an experience that's already complete. And then it says that you know these ideas and concepts. But when you're really looking at what's going on in experience, it's something that cannot be described. The language is something that was created as an attempt to communicate experience, which is something that cannot be communicated. The made-up language is trying to communicate and point back to experience. We tend to believe the language to mean experience instead of that it's pointing to experience. The experience of this that's labeled a hand is an experience. There's so much that makes up this. Textures, colors, all kinds of things we can use to describe it. But nothing can accurately say what this is. We make up a word, hand, that tries to contain this experience. And that is overlaid on top of experience, saying that this is a hand and this has meaning and this is mine. We always say, this is called something. This is that, or this is the next. What's this? What's the this that's here? That's being labeled a something through an idea and a concept. The this is the undescribable. The this is reality. The this is what's here.
And in fact, what I understand you to say is that the labeling not only breaks down what we experience, that breaks us apart from that experience. Not really, but that's the effect.
Right. When we speak in a means to convey a message or an experience. And there's always a point of the one that's trying to convey the message and then the person or whatever that you're trying to convey that message to. We started to believe ourselves to be that reference point. That's all it ever was a reference point. When you look at what you consider I to mean, and you try to find that I here, you start to see that it's only experience. It's this entire experience that's going on right now. But the I was just an overlay reference point that this is what I take myself to be. This is my body. This is what you're taught since you were a child. I have 10 fingers. I have 2 hands. I have a head. I have, you know, a feet. Prior to that, as a child who does not, who hasn't identified yet with, and if any one of you have kids or grandkids and they're before that age, around 1 year old, when they look inside a mirror, they don't recognize that reflection to be themselves. We teach that and impart that on them, that that's them. That same means of experience is still flowing. The overlay or the cover up of that experience is just the ideas. When the break occurs and the ideas stop just for a second, then there's only experience. That's all it ever was. If you look at your current experience, what's occurring here, there are the senses flowing and doing their thing. There's also ideas and concepts that's going on. It's not about stopping them. It's including that in experience as well. It's just, it's not, the idea of you does not unify sense perception, sense experience. And we're getting, you know, pretty deep in that area, but I mean, it, because everything is conceptual, even the idea that there are senses is conceptual.
Wait a minute, you're going to take away all my ground of my foundation. That's what you're aiming for, right? That's what I'm aiming for. Yeah.
The entire carpet gets pulled up, even this, the idea is that there are senses. Because they can seem as though when we say they're sense perception and they're seeing and all of this stuff, it wants to claim it for itself. You want to claim that for you. Well, like, well, yeah, I do see, I do sense, I do feel. But no, remove the I, they're sensing this feeling. There's all this stuff is occurring, including the sense of I. It's not unified. It's not a complete experience, even though that's the way it seemed, because we're taught to look for that experience. We go and we find it.
Because we're taught to look for the experience of I, of an I experiencing something.
Yeah, you go and you look for it because there's a you that have 10 fingers. There's a you that have 2 hands. There's a you that has a head. And then you correlate that with that image that you see in the mirror and, you know, to hold the child up. Yeah, that's you. That's you. That's you. All along, the child knows very well that that's not them. But the point of identification is when they start to believe what's taught to them.
Well, and therein lies the seeming problem. I've been believing this for 50 some odd years. Mm-hmm. And so to back out of that just seems like a monumental task. But I guess it's the only thing going. I mean, it's the only thing that I care about doing anyway. But it does seem monumental.
Well, a way that, excuse me, everyone puts this is that your mind and ideas and concepts, all this stuff, even the ego or the separate self or whatever it is, that it's a bad thing because all this stuff, it's uncontrolled and it should be, you know, snuffed out. Imagine this, that same little child that separated itself to believe that it's something here is your mind making the first point of identification. Its job is knowing fully well that it can't describe or even explain any of this that's going on, except with the limited ideas and concepts that it was taught. It's coloring your experience, labeling it, and then bringing it to you, and you say you understand it. It is on the forefront of deciphering something that cannot be deciphered. It is sheared up because when something occurs outside its normal mode of experience or something that it doesn't know, fear comes up. almost always. That's why most people are afraid of the unknown, because there's no control there and they don't know what's going to happen. And that's where your mind is. So it is like the same little child. So you treat it like that. You treat this stuff with compassion and have fun with it. It's the means, it's the most intimate means that you have of experiencing this world. Why would you treat it like an enemy? It doesn't know just as much as you don't know.
This sense of self, you said, when you say it doesn't know, maybe I got lost in there somewhere. Who am I treating not like an enemy?
Your mind, your thoughts and ideas and concepts. You know, that's how we function in this world. It's through those. That's how we relate. You know, but you say our minds have different layers. Let's say the intellect, even though it's a concept, it's something that you can see. The intellect is a part of you that says it understands or it doesn't understand. Do you understand?
Yes.
Right. Are you aware of that understanding?
Yes.
Is that intellect you, or are you aware of the intellect?
Good point.
We don't even understand the function of how this separation works. Well, that tool, we want to use it to try and decipher what we are when we don't even give it enough attention to understand its own functions. Now, we're getting a little complex, but it's the truth of the matter. There might be all ideas and concepts that we're trying to break down, but the tools that you're using to do it, you don't even know how to use it.
So how do we learn that?
Just like how I just showed you. Just by seeing it, you know it. I'll ask you one other thing. What's the goal of meditation? What's the only goal of meditation?
To know myself.
To interrupt the thinking process, the stream of thoughts.
Thank you.
That was it. It gives the gap. And this is for everyone listening, not just directed at you. It's to give you the space to see that the ideas and thoughts are not directly identify with you. You're not identified with them. That's all it's supposed to do, is to give you that space to see that. Just the same way as you've seen that the intellect is a part that understands, and you can see the understanding.
Right.
Now you know that it isn't exactly you. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it sounds like it's a surgical deconstruction.
That's it. Yeah. The thing is that there is not that there isn't, how can I put this? There is no separate you. There is no separate identity. There is no separate self. What's here is here. Anything separate from it is only separate through ideas and concepts. The conceptual you is only separate conceptually.
A convenient point of reference.
Right.
So that the sound of your voice, the hum of the computer, none of that separate from me. No part of my experience can be separate from another part of experience.
Not from you. It's all occurring, including the experience of you.
Including the experience of a me experiencing it.
It's all inclusive. If you stop for a second, and if you can see with your peripheral vision and include what you're taking as your body, mind, whatever your experience is of yourself right now with your eyes open, include that in all that's happening right now. How is it separate?
Well, only conceptually, only because it's my point of reference.
Exactly. We always take the standpoint that there's a me here that's looking out and experiencing the world. If you include your perception back into even the physical part of you that you're taking to be yourself, how is that separate from experience? It isn't. It takes some time for that to be recognized. It's not things that just happen just like that.
And in fact, you had a recommendation about how we might practice that, something about peripheral vision or?
Well, we look at it this way. Anytime our focus attention is on something is because we want to learn it. We want to know about it. We're asking our intellect to separate and divide and find information about something. And we'll look at something intently and you'll see all the labels fire off. It's white, it's square, it's hot, it's cold, it's all these things. When you relax your vision and start to see through your peripherals and not really focus, you'll start to see that the mind doesn't shoot out labeling all kinds of stuff. And you keep the awareness of yourself included in the experience that's going on right now. And slowly the mind itself will quiet, the labeling and categorizing will start to quiet down because you're not, we take most of the information that we get in through our visual field. That'll start to slow down, the chatter will start to slow down and you'll start to see. Not so much with these eyes. There's a different seeing that occurs.
Looks like Jay has a question. Yeah, go ahead, Jay.
Eshwar, you described when I was asking you about the state you're in, you said that it's not a state. Would you please describe more about why what you are experiencing and what you describe as direct experience is not a state?
Because it's what's happening with you right now. It's the same thing that's happening with me. It's just the ideas and concepts has no meaning or validity. You just see that what's occurring and the labeling of what's occurring has nothing to do with each other.
So you'd say it's more like what I hear you saying is more like just a mere recognition that they don't have anything to do with each other.
Yep.
And Don, you had a question. Go ahead.
Hi, Eshwar. My question is, a lot of the masters or Ramana Maharshi and some other ones, they label this as Sat Chit Ananda, which is like truth, awareness, bliss. And a lot of times that is a quality that is attributed to this, whatever, you know, the highest or absolute. And I was wondering if you could speak to that because you had alluded earlier that this is not a something. And there tends to be a bit of confusion in my mind because I know I can't be an emotion. I know that's not my reality. I know I'm not the emotional body. And yet this bliss is described as an internal state that not really just inside, but an expansive one where the bliss is a felt sense. And sometimes when I meditate, this feeling of bliss does come over me. When I interact with the world, it seems to disappear or dissipate. And I'm wondering if you find this in what you're experiencing. Is that something you resonate with, Sat Chit Ananda, as a descriptor of what you're experiencing? And could you speak on this, what they like to call bliss? Whatever you want to share in regards to that would be helpful. Thank you.
Sat Chit Ananda, existence, consciousness, bliss. That's what they say. This is not that. The only type of bliss that I can see that this would equate to is they always tell stories in reference to the type of release that one would feel, which is one story that I find that's really... that really speaks to it is there's a beggar sitting on a chest, begging his entire life. And, you know, he thinks he's poor. He doesn't have any money. He's been at it for 30 years. And then a yogi walks by and asks him what is he sitting on? And he said, this old box. He said, you ever looked inside of it? And he said, no. And he kind of went on his day begging. And then towards the end of the day, he decided to look in the box and it was a chest of gold. And in that instant, he realized that he didn't have to be poor and he didn't have to live like that anymore. But all along he thought he was poor, when the answer was always there. He just had to open and look. It was always with him. He just didn't know. The release in knowing that the belief that you had was false because you didn't look and see that you already had it. That can be considered bliss, because it's none of this was what I thought that it was, including me. That's the release. Now, there's also states of consciousness that you can get into through meditation that can get you to bliss. Maharshi also said that which appears and disappears is not real. Those states of consciousness, this isn't something that you fall into and fall out of. This doesn't come and go. It's always here. There isn't a thing that's here that's it.
In fact, you said about that in your interview with Sean Nevins, this is not a moving forward, it's a falling back.
Mm-hmm.
It's not achieving I take that to mean it's not achieving something. It's traveling lighter. It's removing something.
Yeah, it's a regression and a recognition of what's always here. Now, there's a lot of people that say that you don't have to do anything. You're already it. You know, all this other stuff. You absolutely need effort to see through your ideas and concepts of yourself as ideas and concepts. The effort is needed until it isn't needed, until that's seen and it's an experiential thing that occurs. Make no mistake, once this occurs, and it can occur for everyone, this is not something that's reserved only for people who have been practicing for 30 years or you know, if you're a spiritual person. If you knew what life was for me prior to all of this, you would think that I'd be the least ready to see this, I would say. It has nothing to do with any of that. But once this occurs, it's not mistaken. It cannot be confused for anything else. This speaks to the core of your own existence. That's why for everyone, they have to see it for themselves. No one can, people can point on what to do, and you have to do it on your own. And it's not exactly the same way for everyone else. It's not exactly how it happened for me, or what occurred here isn't the same thing that might occur for someone else. The entire life is colored with different experiences and concepts, things that they thought to be real and traumas that they face. I found that dealing with all the pain and suffering that I felt that I was going through in life, and seeing you know, essentially, I was responsible for the way things were at the time, all the hurt, all the suffering, the way that I felt. And I never addressed my own feelings, thoughts, and emotions. It was always the other person. When I started to bring that back to me and start to address my own feelings and emotions, they are the most powerful things that can bring you in the present moment. They're also the most powerful thing that can move you away from here. If you don't allow them to show you what they're trying to say, the minute you block a feeling or an emotion, you're holding on to it. When you invite it in and allow it to pass through you, letting go of it is a natural byproduct. Some of us don't let go of things so easily because we feel the world has wronged us in such a way that, you know, it owes us something. That binds. Feelings and emotion will bind you up. We tend to hold on to them very strongly. That's how we think we feel ourselves.
We think we feel ourselves.
Right.
I have a question.
I hear, but hang on a second, Jay. Well, let me follow up on this one thought. I apologize, but I just want to follow up on that thought. We think we feel ourselves. Can you say that in English?
Isn't an emotion a thought about something that happened in the past?
Yes. Isn't an emotion a thought about? Ask me that again.
Isn't an emotion a thought about a particular situation?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Is the situation what's occurring now, the past, or the future?
I guess it depends on the situation. I mean,
let's say right now.
Right now?
Yeah. It would be a thought about now.
Yes, it would be still, a thought about now.
It would still be a thought.
Yeah, you're right. Even though that's not really how we experience it. We experience it as like a visceral, right? Depending on the emotion, like an explosion, or even like with irritate, you just suddenly notice you're irritated. Or, you know, I mean, that's how that seems to be the experience.
Right. It can seem that way, but that's not how it is. The same nervous energy you have when you, let's say, meet somebody new that you like for the first time is that same nervous energy you feel when you realize you did something wrong. It's just colored differently. It's labeled differently.
Right.
The intensity of it is felt more on your personal relation to the situation that's going on right now. And I think somebody just said something about what's going on the other side of the world with wars and all of that stuff. That's not within your experience right now. I don't speak to anybody else's suffering. I only look at my own personal experience. That story is about what's going on over there that's being sent to you by all these different media outlets that they're coloring what's happening to gain your perception or however they would like you to feel. It's not within your experience of what's actually happening right now. So, you know, that's where we get caught in, you know, what's going on in this world when we don't even know what's happening over there is really what's happening over there.
Well, we don't even know what's going on right here.
There you right? go.
Yeah.
The immediate thing to look at, this isn't trying to figure out the external world. This is trying to figure out the nature of your relationship to what's going on here. That is it. That's what this entire thing has always been about. The thing that's in relation to what we're considering the world. How are we going to decipher the world when we're not looking at the thing that has a relationship with the world or saying that it has a relationship with the world?
Yeah.
It all starts here, but it can only start in this moment. This is the only place you can accurately deconstruct that particular concept, that particular idea, the one that you have of yourself. It cannot be done anywhere else.
And that's the only way we can see anything clearly, is doing that first.
Exactly. Everything always led to this, is to bring you to the present, bring you to this moment. It doesn't mean that this moment is, however they say it, it brings you to this point so you can accurately start to do the work that's necessary to see through the concepts that you have of you. Forgo the world, leave that alone. Has nothing to do with you. When you understand this, all of that makes sense.
Wow.
Until you don't understand this, that will always seem like it doesn't make sense.
I might come back to asking you about that, but I know Jay is chomping at the bit. Jay, you have a question?
Yeah, I forgot what I was going to ask, but no. People like Eckhart Tolle and what's the reverse work, that woman?
Byron Katie?
Yeah, Byron Katie. These hit rock bottom experiences and they give up on life. You know, they don't want this personality self anymore. They're done. You describe this great suffering. And, you know, I see that as a huge motivation for a person to enter this path of letting go of the self. I've had a pretty good life. I've had some success. I've made some money, started a business. you know, I think I like my life. So in a way, I'm starting to see that that's actually a hindrance in awakening to have a life you think you like that's good, because then you want to hold on to it. You're in the illusion that you think this is something good that you don't want to let go of. Do you have anything to share about that?
Why are you looking? I don't speak on broad things like this. If I'm going to talk to you, I'm going to talk to you directly. Why do you feel that way? Why do you search? Why do you seek?
I don't know if I can explain why. I've always had a drawing to truth my whole life. I can't really tell you why. It's always been a pull in me. It's somehow coming from some deep place I don't understand.
Follow it.
Amen, brother.
Eshwar, I assume you are joining us from your car, because I assume that's because your children, I don't know. I made that assumption. Maybe the kids are in the house and I don't know.
Out here is peace and quiet. Yeah, I do have two young ones, and they rule the world. We think we're in control. We're the ones that we got to change them. We got to feed them. We got to put them in the house.
And right. Sure, that's right. I'm moving in with you next week. You can do all that stuff for me.
Yeah, this is my office, I guess. It's comfortable. It's quiet, and it's the lighting might be a little off.
It is. And you did something a moment ago that kind of brightened it up in there. Will that run your car battery down? I hate to have to come give you a jump in the morning. Yeah, that's better.
Yeah, that'll work.
That's great. Thank you. Thank you. Folks, we have Eshwar for another half an hour. So let's get while the getting's good. Who's got questions for Eshwar? George, go ahead.
Hi, Eshwar. So the only thing I know is that I am, but I still feel like George. So what's your thoughts on that?
So the only thing you know that you are or you am, how do you know that?
I have a sense of being.
Being what?
Just being. I don't know what. That's just it. I don't know.
And what's the I that doesn't know?
I don't know that either.
That's just another thought.
That's a thought.
Right. When you're being, there's a space, a spaciousness that's about being, that's not anything. Come to that space without you.
Okay.
I'll do you one better. Try to describe yourself without any concepts.
I can't.
There you are. That's it.
Thank you.
Well, and, you know, Eshwar, you and I went through something. I think you asked me the same question. And frankly, for me to just sit there without concepts felt very frightening. It felt like you had pulled the rug out from under me. I don't know if George is having that same experience. Yes. Thanks. Now go away, Eshwar, right?
Well, you only find meaning in ideas and concepts when you start to, and you see, this is available to us all the time. It's there. We just don't like it. Well, if you don't like it, then you're very close to it. You're closer than close. The only thing that can move you away is your ideas and concepts about even you being a you. So sit in the uncomfortability, because that's where it is. It is in the unknown, because it isn't known and you can't know it. Because when you give up on you, then you see. That's why people who go through great deals of suffering, where, you know, mine stuck me in addiction, where I was in the basement with a gun to my head on quite a few occasions, where I didn't want any of this because I didn't understand why it couldn't stop, and I didn't know how to. So the only other out was either to do that or to put myself in a place where whatever happened, happened. This is what occurred. This is what occurred. Now, everyone have their own bottoms. Everyone have the place that they go to. It doesn't have to be as dramatic as what we are or what I went through. It does not mean that it's not available for everyone too. It's just that sincere looking and the uncomfortability. The things that you're uncomfortable with, that's what's going to lead you there. Not the things you're comfortable with. Oh, believe me, if you liked this entire thing, there'd be no reason for you to go and look and try to find something that you know.
Ezra, that's kind of what I was trying to say, is that if you have a good life, there's no motivation for you to want to do that. That's then, like what you said. That's kind of what I was trying to say.
Yeah, live your life. Be how it is. You know, if it's strong enough within you that you want to go and see what this is, I would say what I did is to understand completely that the conceptions that I had about myself were just conceptions. That's the external character. The next closest intimate thing that I had that I considered myself to be were my memories, how I remembered myself to be. So once I saw that it wasn't there, memory is continuity. Once I saw that it wasn't there in memory, I didn't accept it in ideas and concepts of this world, and it wasn't there in memory, that broke continuity. So what are you left with? What's here right now, as it's happening, as it's unfolding, not colored by past, not colored by projection of the future. Not holding on or expecting it to be something different, and not accepting it as something that was created by an imagination of something that happened in the past. That's all that ever occurs. The continuity stops. This is it.
And Eshwar, remind me again, because I think it's the fear that keeps me from remembering, but remind me again how I stay in that spot that we were just discussing with George. How you got me there, and how I stay there.
Well, one of the things to understand is thoughts, a thought story, and your actual experience of what's happening right now. So you can say whatever is in front of you. Everyone is seeing a color in front of them. Whatever that color is, the label or a thought will pop up and say that's green or whatever you're looking at, or red. So that the experience is there first. The thought labels that experience as it's occurring, but it also points back to the experience because you come back and you look at it. We get stuck here and believe here. When it says green is my favorite color and green is beautiful. And I remember one time when I wore that, that's a story you get caught up with. Okay. That's the falsity. That's the imagination. That's what has nothing to do with what's occurring right now. There's also when someone says green and it's not occurring in your present experience, you just imagine it and then run off with another story. It's knowing the difference between these things and seeing that very clearly will always bring you here. Interesting thing that I used to do, and I think Eckhart Tolle had spoken to this, is in present experience, you know, do something intentional. Wash your hand. Just focus on that, feel whatever sensation that's occurring, and verbally speak it out. This is washing my hand. What you just did is move a thought from in here external to your experience. So it's no longer internalized. It's what's happening here in your experience. And you'll start to be here. One thing I found effective, and this was simple for me. I put my hand in a pot of water and just feel the sensations. Not trying to think that it's wet, but if wet pops up, just notice it. But no, it has nothing to do with the experience. Try to see that it's not cold or it's hot. But if a thought pops up and says that it is, that's okay that it pops up. And what you start to see is that the thought has nothing to do with the experience of it occurring. Or even if it does, the experience is always first. The thought is the interpretation of that experience. That's all happening here. Physical sensations and all that stuff is here. Meditations, you're always focused on your breath, which is a physical sensation that grounds you in the present moment, coupled with a thought about something that's happening or trying to see the difference between that, but you're always rooted in a physical sensation. That way, when, say, a fancy experience, I should say, occurs, you're not drawn away with it and you know that it's happening right here, right now. You're not pulled away in a state of consciousness where you can, it can be like, I didn't know if that occurred because I wasn't really aware of being here. That could have happened somewhere else, or it's a mental state or something like that. Everything that's done grounds you and roots you right here in present experience. And when I say here, it's just what's occurring right now. It's not a specific point. It's just what's occurring in present experience. It's, if it's not known in your direct experience, it's an assumption that you're making. Hmm. Plain and simple.
Like assuming hot, cold, green.
Yeah, like assuming there's, I don't know, your car is still outside.
I have to go check.
Until you go and see, you don't know.
Right.
That's the whole thing. But those subtle assumptions is what we make with ourselves.
How do I make that assumption with myself? I assume that there's something that's sensing.
No, you assume that you're a body and you're a mind and you're encapsulated and you're in this thing. If everyone would go like this, put their finger up and run it down the side of their face. You just experience yourself. Was it inside a body?
All I know is I felt something.
It's just an experience.
Yes.
It could be labeled a finger touching a face. It could be labeled a hairy face. It could be labeled anything. It's an experience. You just experience yourself. You don't even know how to describe that. Mm. But that experience only happens right here. Right now, nowhere else. The story about it is, you know, it's a pleasant sensation, or it's five fingers just running down my face. That's all the stuff that's assumed, taught, learned.
And was it stuff not helpful?
Well, it's not that it's not helpful. It's you see them for what they are. And that seeing only happens now. That's it. The initial question was how to be here, how to be present, yes. How to stay here. And the thing is, you're always here. The only thing that moves you away from here is your ideas, thoughts, stories, you know, things about tomorrow, things about yesterday. You get drawn back into them or move forward into them. Still, the drawing back and the moving forward still happens right here. Nowhere else.
The past and the future are imagined, and the imagining is occurring right here.
Exactly. Nowhere else. The understanding and the not understanding occurs right here. That's all that needs to be seen. When that starts to be seen here, what used to be a razor's edge starts to expand. And that's all that you will end up seeing. Effective self-inquiry only is effective from here. It's always been that way. They say you always get to this point. Ramana Maharshi always talk about one-pointedness. How to get to that single point first before you can do.
We've got about 15 minutes left. If anybody wants to, yes, George, please go ahead.
Okay, Eswar, you know, we're talking, what's your concept of non-dual, okay? I mean, I see that there's, you know, 18 participants here plus whoever's on the radio, okay? To me, my sense is I'm here as an individual and I'm looking at, you know, several other individuals.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you see?
That's an assumption that you're making. I'm only talking to myself. But that's the subtlety. Because you take yourself to be this, all you see is out there. It's akin to when you, I don't know, let's say you drove a Dodge your entire life. Yeah? And then all of a sudden you bought a Toyota, or a particular model of Toyota, then you start to recognize that everywhere that you go, that particular model of car that you have, you start to see it everywhere. It's the same thing when the identification is taken to be this. It's not that this seeing of the way things are stops, it's just a knowing that it isn't that is what's recognized. But there's a very real sense that the same thing that makes up what's here is the same thing that makes up everything else. That's the assumption that you guys make too, that because I see myself as this, everything else that I see is that as well. Like that, you're assuming the other person is conscious. That's an assumption that you're making. You're assuming that they're a person because you take yourself to be a person and they kind of look like me. That's not how this is. It's the external stuff, though. That doesn't matter. What matters is the thing that's saying that it's relating to the external. Non-dual doesn't mean deciphering the outside stuff. It's to see there is no separation here. The initial mistake that was made on our end is here, not there, not outside.
In Eshwar, in discovering that there's no separation, is there a? Do you find that there is a flow to life? I mean, a flow that you can be in or not be in.
Well, what you start to see is what's occurring. Is as it's occurring and could not have occurred any other way. And the way things are is perfect, exactly as it is. The only thing that says that it could be a different way is a thought or an idea or a you that say that. Ignoring the fact that the way things have occurred is the way that it did occur, and it could not have been a different way.
So is there, and maybe this goes too far into that hypothetical, is there a possibility I could be at the wrong place at the wrong time?
How?
Yeah, I don't know. I could be sitting here talking to you, or I could be out there, you know, on the highway getting in an accident.
But you're here sitting talking to me. The other is not a possibility.
Only in imagination.
There you go. We ask how to be here, but the first thing we want to move away with is imagination of moving away from here, because it could be different.
Yeah, so that's just an evasive tactic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You said something in your interview with Sean about there being something inside that guides us. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, when all of this first started, like in recovery, when I was actively looking and searching and seeking, there were answers to questions. Like I would ask myself these, whatever it is that I wanted to know, and the answers would come. But I wasn't really paying attention because I didn't know how to. I didn't know what I was like. How do I realize, or how did I recognize that I should be doing certain things? And when I started listening to some of the teachers, the things that they were saying were the answers that already came to me. Mm. Like that peripheral vision stuff. Yeah. There's teachers that were talking about that. How to remain conscious and present. There were things that was already started to happen. And then when I heard it and the teacher just reinforced whatever it was that was guiding, I don't know what the hell that was. but it's like that. I had no way of describing what that was. It was like the understanding of the question. It understood itself in the answers that it gave me so long as I stayed open to it. I'll tell you one interesting thing that happened. When I first started doing the Ramana Maharshi self-inquiry stuff of asking myself who I am, who I am, who I am, without being present to understand the answer that came, I didn't understand any of it. Because I wasn't present, I didn't know any of that stuff. I was just asking. But looking back on it retrospectively, the answers came because my eyes were closed. I went to sleep. I woke up the next morning. My eyes were closed. I was conscious and aware, but not of anything. And in bright, flashing lights, it says, I am in the darkness and the nothing of nothing. But I didn't know what that was. I didn't have the awareness to even, you know, look into any of that stuff. But I asked, and that happened so many times, but I didn't know. You guys have, this is why I say it's available, because you're in a position of, you know what you're looking for, and it's right there. It's even before you open your eyes, it's right there. Allow the answer to come to you. You have enough knowledge about this to recognize what's occurring. I didn't have that. And even in seeking it, got me to the point where I just wanted to slip my wrists. When I asked that question, who am I, who am I, and all these ideas I'm trying to like break down without having the intense consciousness and presence here, I went in the woods like screaming and I had a knife to my hand. I was like, I thought that's the point I had to get to it. And I was like, you know what, let me just kind of fall back and look and see what's going on. And then I started paying attention to that stuff. And then when I listened to him, and I started listening to Nisargadatta, like they laid the groundwork. And then later on, some Buddhism stuff, Liberation Unleashed, they helped clarify a lot of the experience and understanding the functioning of the faculties that we have right now. What was that question?
There's a couple. Lynn has asked a couple. I'll just read them both to you and you can take it where you like. Do you do any meditation? Are you a vegetarian? Do you do any form of purification? That's question one. Question two is, how is your family experiencing you? Do they see a difference?
Question one, I used to be a vegetarian because I thought that's what I needed to do to achieve this, and I realized that that was also a concept. That was a belief, and it wasn't required. Now, for some, I don't know. For me, it wasn't that way. There are significant health benefits because I noticed, you know, how all of this kind of changed at the time when I was in recovery house and I was vegan completely. You know, I lost significant weight. I saw the way it affected my physical body and all of that stuff. But I realized I was only doing that because I thought by doing that I would gain something in the enlightenment or all of this stuff. So as far as I can see, is it required? No. Am I trying to be healthy for any reasons? No. There is no reason for me to really do anything. Everything is just doing its thing as it's doing. As for my family, initially it was a little rough because a lot of the understanding that came, imagine all of you, if you will, for my wife, she, when I said to her that, and this is the experience, whatever occurs and only what's happening here right now is the only thing that's of existence or that's considered real or meaning, not really meaningful, but this is all that exists to me, nothing else. What's in front, what's in sensory perception, whatever's occurring. And, you know, I was traveling back and forth from the recovery house in Lancaster back down to Philadelphia. And we had gotten into a few arguments in the beginning because I said those things. You know, because when they weren't around me, even my wife and kids didn't mean anything. There was no attachment to anything. How that has changed now is the wife woke up. There was a few things that her and I sat and discussed and talked about, and we did a few meditations together, and then it opened her up just to the idea of the way things were, and she discovered it on her own. She had a few questions here and there, and that was it. You know, so it kind of spread its way that way.
You make it sound very simple. You know, there's some folks in this room who've been doing this for 30, 40 years. She had a few questions and then she woke up. No problem.
Well, she there were a few people that helped me on the way that she needed some, a life of addiction leaves a emotional toll on, it's not only the person that's addicted, it's everyone around them. Yeah. So there was healing that was required all around. And, that's the best way I can say is she came to terms to understand that she didn't need anything external to make her happy. Mm. Whatever it was within. And really and truly, this stuff is not really about, it's not about being happy. It's not about not being happy. It's not even about neutrality. It really isn't about anything. That's the whole thing, but we make it about a me and then something.
Yeah.
It just is. And if you have the pleasure of enjoying it consciously, then do so. If you feel yourself to have free will and choice, do it. You know, whether you realize that it's that way or you don't, doesn't change the fact that this is how it is. I do live in Philadelphia still.
Well, it looks like, unfortunately, we are out of time, Eshwar. I am so grateful for you coming and talking to us. Thank you for your time.
No problem. And if you guys want to reach out, you do have my phone number. Pass it along.
Are you sure you want me to post that? Do you want me to pass that? And maybe I'll do it where the whole world can't see it. I'll pass it along. Yeah, internal.
Those who want to know, you can pass it on, and they can call, email, because whoever emails, I do the same thing. I'll give them phone number and just call. You know,
cool. And we will. I think we do have your email posted. That's what sensewithoutmind@gmail.com.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Again, we're so very, very grateful, Eshwar, and you will be hearing from me.
No problem. I'll look forward to it. You guys enjoy and breathe out. Take it easy. You're not real. All right. All right, take care. Bye-bye.